Welcome to Haldane's Law Matters. Thank you, and thank you again to Jose, the current chairman of the Hong Kong Bar Association. And today we're discussing relationships between Hong Kong's executive legal system and judicial independence. Welcome, Jose. Now, the reason I was particularly interested in it was because I was in the audience at the Hong Kong University recently, where there was a debate where two of the panelists you'll know, there was Alan Hu SC and Ronnie Tong SC, and two academics who I won't mention the name of because I don't think either you nor I would recognize them. So it was a panel of four. And the reason that the debate was being held at the university was because there was recently an article that was published that was to do with Hong Kong being an executive-led government. And the issue was, for the lawyers, did that in any way compromise the court system? And the spirited address from both Alan and from Ronnie was, no, it does not. And that, in fact, I think it was Alan who suggested that the use of a judicial review could be used against the individual, of course, or against a bank, for example, but against a government as well. And they were still operating as they always have. So would you agree so far that that proposition is a sound one that was being put forward?
I'm not a political scientist, but the expression that is sometimes used, which is executive-led, from memory, something which was already used, I think, in the 80s and 90s by reference to the system that was then operating. I think what is important to bear in mind is at the end of the day, whatever epithet one chooses to use, under the basic law, it's made very clear, Article 84, that the courts here shall adjudicate cases with the laws applicable here as prescribed in Article 18 of the basic law. And we may refer to precedents, but the more important one is the courts, that's Article 85, shall exercise judicial power independently, free from any interference. And that's really what's important. So, under the basic law, the legislature passes the law, the executive enforces the law and implements policies, and the judiciary is there to exercise judicial power independently, free from any interference.
There's a gentleman whose name I can't properly pronounce, but I'll do my best. It's Chow Zia-yang. I think he was the chair of the Basic Law Committee in 2008 to 2013. And he was important in this debate because it was he, and he's very well understanding of the system, the legal system we have here, and Macau, took the trouble to explain very clearly that the judiciary has a job, the executive has a job, and they work together, but independently to the extent that they each have different roles within the society. Does that resonate? Does that sound correct?
I think this is consistent both with how the basic law is designed and also how things work in practice. So for practical purposes and not being a political scientist, whether you've got a contract between individuals or whether you're a company or an individual and you have a lawsuit against a government, the courts will basically only look at the law and evidence and reach an impartial decision based on the law and the evidence and nothing else. And I think that's what really matters.
So that brings me on to another topic that I thought we could usefully explore, Jose, today. And it's one that we're meeting on a Monday morning when the world is in turmoil generally. With all sorts of problems. And while I chuckle, in fact, very often I grimace as I open the London Times, the New York Times, and so on, and read what's going on around the world. And I was thinking, really, how isolated and in a bubble that works pretty well we are in Hong Kong. And I was thinking, really, how is it you, as the leader of the bar now, in this important role, president of the Bar Council, how can we actually improve our image in this difficult world? Because you will know, as I know, that once you get outside Hong Kong, there is still a perception that the stuff we're just started talking about isn't really the way that it works here. You can be having dinner in London, and when you say, I come from Hong Kong nowadays, they can say, you're still in Hong Kong? Is it safe? How do we, as lawyers, start to rebuild Hong Kong's international image to, in fact, reflect the truth abroad?
Yeah, that's a very good point. You're quite right that in a number of places, what people read about Hong Kong is necessarily a very small snippet.
Or nonsense.
Which happens, and certain angles will be taken because, as we all know, bad news sells better than good news.
Yep.
I think what we try to do is two things. So we try to invite more lawyers in particular to come to Hong Kong. And also we try to participate in as many conferences as we can. So for the bar, we normally go to the International Bar Association, opening of the legal year in London. I've been to the one in Paris last year. We go to UIA. We go to as many conferences as we can and exchange honest, candid views with others. And then what I really found was a lot of the challenges that we face, and of course we are facing challenges like any other jurisdiction, a lot of them actually are pretty, I wouldn't say common, but there's a broad theme which probably resonates in most jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in America, there's clearly trouble with a perception of the government versus the law. And occasionally in England, we get the same problem with the headlines in the Daily Mail and stuff like that. So yes, we're not unique, but it's frustrating as lawyers, isn't it? You and I are both lawyers. You have now the, I hope, enviable task actually for you of being president of the Bar Association. There's room for you to actually look at this in a way that's particularly constructive in trying to present Hong Kong in a truthful light.
I think we have more than 10,000 lawyers in Hong Kong, if you include the solicitors and the barristers. And in some sense, I think it all falls upon us not to sell, because that is the wrong word, but I think really to communicate and to describe in the way which is both truthful, accurate, with other members of the legal fraternity. Because what I really find in particular with lawyers is most of them, if not almost all of them, don't have any axe to grind. So they're really there, want to know the facts. They ask you very precise questions about how does the system work, can win in litigation against the state, etc. Things like this, which we can discuss.
It's not so much probably lawyers around the world, is it? I think lawyers around the world will listen, and they do understand to a large extent. That's your experience.
That's my experience. Actually, it's been very good dealing with either judges or lawyers from other jurisdictions, whether common law or non-common law jurisdiction.
And in fact, you and I were both involved in a meet. How do we call it? A meeting?
A symposium
that the Bar Council actually promoted last year.
That's right. It was with the World Justice Project, which compiles the Rule of Law Index, which a lot of people follow. And that was quite a good example, I think, because we had Hong Kong judges, we had solicitors like your good self, we had barristers, academics. So we really tried to bring a cross-section of the Hong Kong legal community and try to show through the exchange, transparent and a fairly frank exchange about what we've done well, what we can do better.
Yep. And it's worth saying, isn't it, that we actually rank pretty high, don't we? Fourth in Asia, is it? Southeast Asia?
We rank pretty high, both in terms of Asia and also across all jurisdictions. I don't have the ranking in front of me, but we basically are in the same range as countries, more or less like France, Netherlands, and so forth.
Yeah.
So we do better in certain sub-indices than other, because an index has different weightings for different factors. And so for some of them, we do particularly well. Some, there's room for improvement.
But the ordinary press, of course, and the ordinary individual, where we may be sitting around the world, doesn't get to know about this, frankly. It's not the sort of thing that makes headlines in the Daily Mail or the Telegraph, is it? If we're concentrating on English press from
That's right. It's things like indices and things which are a bit complicated tend to travel less well than a photo or because I've spent a bit of time now in the last year traveling. I get to read the newspapers, which occasionally touch upon Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And very often, of course, some of it is factually correct, as you would expect. But I think they are either implications or nuances, which tend to be not necessarily fact-based.
Yes. I think you're being quite polite there to the press, actually. Some of it is a bit galling because it's just wrong. I have read things where they say that somebody has been charged with a particular offence, particularly if it's under national security law. And in fact, it's not. It's charged under the old colonial legislation that used to cover most of it anyway.
Another good way we see is through as the admission in Hong Kong on ad hoc basis of overseas barristers. So we've had pretty experienced leaders in their own field who come to Hong Kong to do either criminal or civil cases. Now they will experience either trial or the appeal in Hong Kong, and they will be able to reflect truthfully on their experience here. And of course, when they come here, so it's not just turning up in court for that day or two, but they will have interactions with solicitors, barristers, academics, and I think gives them a pretty good picture of what Hong Kong is holistically.
And they'll take that home and the word goes round.
That's right.
Thank you, Jose. It's been great speaking to you today, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.